This passage, pardon me, from Matthew is part of a large series of parables which fit into Matthew's overall plan for writing his gospel, which is to say to the Jews, two generations after Jesus, that the people who accepted Jesus as Messiah were the real Jews, and the people who did not were not the real Jews. So this happens. Matthew locates, there'll be parables after the cleansing of the temple, very near the Passion story, where, of course, Matthew's going to have the Jews falsely, as it happens, responsible for the death of Jesus. But he wanted to make this point in the strongest possible way. So he's doing a bunch of things. He's wanting to say that the people who say, I am going to go, you know, the so-called faithful Jews, and do not go, are not the faithful Jews. But then he makes a really extraordinary claim that the people on the lowest stratum of society, the whores, the mafiosi, were in better shape with God because they were open to hearing the voice of Jesus than the pious people were, the priests, the Pharisees. So what Matthew was doing in his own time, I think, was issuing not just a statement of demarcation, that those non-messianic Jews are not the real Jews, but we are. But he's also, I think, implicit in that issuing a warning as to the Jesus Jews of his time being so self-satisfied and so unforgiving, and above all, so classist in their understanding as to who is acceptable to God, that they too can fail. So what has this to do with us? Well, directly, not a great deal. Except that I think that the warning stands that we, you know, especially today, there's this emphasis from certain quarters of the church on the ultra-rightness of the Roman church and the inadequacy of everybody else. We better be pretty careful about that, about being too certain of our own righteousness. And that's a perennially useful message, I think. Because God knows in the history of the church, we've killed all kinds of people in the name of our own righteousness. Huh? Mercifully, I don't think that's happening too much, at least not in North America, but it has happened. But then there's the other thing that is extremely important, which I think is pertinent to us, that we want to say, well, the people at Limberlost, for example, or East London, Far East on Dundas, the rubbies and the alcoholics and the whores, I think we are far too ready to dismiss these people as if they are deaf to, obtuse to, the Word of God. And of course, if we treat them that way, then they're not going to hear the Word of God in our behavior. But then that cuts the other direction too, mercifully. That even our own smugness, even our own self-righteousness, even our own certainty, which can really become a kind of arrogance and dismissiveness of other people, even that's forgivable. We can move beyond that. We can move beyond that. So ultimately, the word is, like it always is, bad news, good news. Huh? Beware of smugness. Beware of complacency. Beware of too premature certainty as to who's right and who's wrong. But then, that's the bad news. But the good news is that God is larger, as the first letter of John says, God is larger than our hearts. Even if we narrow our hearts, even if we exclude people on the basis of class or appearance or smell, smell is really important in this stuff. If you ever work around poor people, just as a footnote, one of the most difficult things is they smell bad. They really do smell bad. But that had nothing to do with their moral qualities. Huh? And so it is a call to opening our eyes to the goodness of God, which is universally distributed, and to the constant awareness of God's prevailing mercy over our own failures, over the failures of anybody else. God is still there, calling us beyond ourselves into a larger life, a truer life, a more generous life.